Welcome to the Oldie Literary Lunch, sponsored by Noble Caledonia, the world experts in small ship cruising.
Our author's worldwide cup is full. The World Cup, that is, exerts a pull of fascination, a saga that encompasses a world of masses and classes and countries joined in one never-ending quest to reign supreme, the final test that exemplifies not just football, but national pride. And furthermore, no, I must now sit aside. For the oracle who always told us what's on. Welcome our author, whistle, kick off. Here's John Motson.
Well, Barry, thanks very much. It was a brilliant poem, quite original. I'm sorry, I'm the only person in the room who didn't get the parrot joke. Anyway, maybe if I heard it every time you have a lunch, I'd probably get it. Anyway, listen, it's really nice to be here, and I just want to explain for those of you that don't know me, apart from being a football commentator, I actually started my career on what some of us of this generation, hopefully most of you, lovingly used to call the local weekly newspaper. Yeah, exactly. Those days have gone, haven't they? Yeah. The Barnet Press is where I started in 1963. And after 4 years as a trainee reporter, I moved to the Sheffield Morning Telegraph, another famous daily paper in the provinces, which, rather like the Barnet Press, has since closed. So there you go. That's how I started. Moved to there from BBC. BBC Radio 5 hadn't started then. I started my broadcasting career on BBC Radio 2, did 3 years there, and then after being sort of grounded as a radio commentator and trained that way, I became a commentator on a programme that you all know called Match of the Day, where I found the conversion from radio to television somewhat daunting and obviously slipped into the commentator's trap more than once by saying things like, for those of you watching in black and white, Spurs are in the yellow shirts. I'm going to the World Cup and saying these Brazilians are so good they're just running around the pitch playing with themselves. I didn't realise that was funny before that. And of course I worked with Gary Lineker for many years on Match of the Day. He was a player in my early days as a commentator. And he once scored 38 goals in one season. That was in his one season, actually, for Everton. And then I checked again and I found out it wasn't 38, it was 39. Next time I commentated on Gary Lineker, I said, listen, I said, he scored 39 goals this season, exactly twice as many as he got last year. And he couldn't find out where the other half goal had come from. Strange that, isn't it? Now then, I met many great people in football. I was lucky to meet people in other sports as well. I met Jack Nicholson once at a tennis tournament. I worked with Muhammad Ali on a boxing match. But that's for another time. I want to tell you today, I've only got 10 minutes, and I'm a great sort of, as all broadcasters are, I try to stick to time. But I've got time to tell you about two of the great characters I met in football, and a lot of the guys and ladies here today will be able to identify with these names. Bill Shankly and Brian Clough. Right, well, let's start with Bill, because Bill Shankly was an irascible Scotsman who basically rebuilt Liverpool and turned them into the club that they've been for many years since. Bill was very short in height, but in terms of football stature, he was a giant. He was like almost hewn out of rock the way he gave his presence to a room and how he dominated a conversation. And he was unpretentious in many ways. He wore a Burton suit. He always had his hands dug into his trouser pockets. And when he spoke to you, he didn't speak, he growled. But that was Bill Shankly. We were all fairly wary of him. But one thing about Bill Shankly was he had his own hero in football. He idolised a man called Tom Finney. Hooray. You got him? Sir Tom Finney, as he later became. Preston North End. Oh, you're all nodding now. This is great. And every time you asked Bill Shankly about a modern player, whether it was Kevin Keegan or Trevor Francis or whoever you brought up in conversation in those days in the 70s, Shankly would look at you and he'd say, "Aye, aye, aye, maybe, but not as good as Tommy Finney. I'd play Tommy Finney if he was wearing his overcoat." And this went on. This went on a bit. You know, the broadcasters and the journalists were getting a bit bored with it, really. And then one day, Manchester United came to Anfield. This was, again, as I said, 70s. Bestlaw and Charlton were all playing. And they beat Liverpool on their own patch 3-1. And Best got a hat-trick. Now, in those days, there was no posh press room or theatre to take the managers into after the match for their post-match comments. Those of us that reported the game then had to hang about in the corridor and hope that when the dressing room door opened, win, lose or draw, the manager would come out and he might give us a few little quotes or just a few gentle thoughts that would turn into a bit of copy. So that was a bad day because Liverpool had lost and five or six of us were hovering outside the dressing room door and muttering to ourselves really about, well, what are we going to ask Bill today? He's going to be in a wicked mood and it's not going to be easy. And then the door opened and Shankly came out and he just looked at us and he had a crew cut, Bill. You couldn't miss him. And he said, hey, any questions, boys? And one of the journalists plucked up the courage. I didn't, but one of them did, to say, Bill, after the way George Best played today, you must consider he's nearly as good, if not better, than the great Tom Finney. Well, to say Shankly gave us all a withering glance would be an understatement. And he looked at us and he said, and particularly at the bloke who'd asked the question, and he said, hey, maybe, but Tommy Finney's 75. And so that was Shanks. Now, I've got to talk about Brian Clough because I was thinking last night, if you didn't know him, how would you describe him? Brash, controversial, contentious. I'm trying to think of all the words that sum up Brian Clough. Compelling. I remember when I first went to interview him, I said to my producer, what am I going to ask Brian Clough? And he said, listen, he said, if you're stuck, he said, just give him the telephone directory to read because people will still listen. And that was Cloughy, wasn't it? I mean, you know, everything that came out, he was one of the first managers to turn into a television celebrity, if you like. It was great to be around at that time, actually. I'm proud I was. I wasn't proud, by the way, the time I met him on one unforgettable night at Highbury, where Arsenal were playing then. I'd done a commentary on the Saturday at White Hart Lane, a North London derby between Spurs and Arsenal. And Arsenal, under George Graham then, who the editor mentioned in conversation today, preceded Arsene Wenger as the manager of Arsenal. George won two championships with a very young team. And Arsenal played really well at Tottenham that day. I mean, there was the late David Rocastle, Michael Thomas, David O'Leary. I could rattle through. The Merson was just coming through. And I thought it was the time to sort of say, well, Arsenal could be on the brink here of a real decade of success. Of course, I didn't know what was coming with Wenger and the overseas players, but I praised them anyway. Let's say I praised them. They beat Tottenham 2-1. On the Wednesday night following, I had to go to Highbury, Arsenal's old ground, of course, to commentate on a League Cup tie between Arsenal and Nottingham Forest. And what I used to do at Highbury, they called it the Marble Halls. It was actually a bit of a foyer with a few, you know, nice tiles on the floor. And I used to stand with my back to the wall because right over there was the main entrance with the glass doors where the commissioner used to stand. And I knew that when the visiting team's coach drew up, because as a commentator, you always wanted to get the lineup as soon as you could, I knew that the visiting manager would leap off the coach and come through those glass doors and I would be right in his eye line so I could grab him before he went down to the dressing room to address the team, get the team off him, get the lineup off him. And on that particular night, the Nottingham Forest team coach drew up. I could see Cluffy jumping out the front seat, his trademark goalkeeper's jersey on, green sweat top he used to wear, bounded through the glass doors, and I was the only person he could see. And he said, "Shithouse." Sorry? Well, exactly what I did. I was pulled up with amazement. And I thought, he can't be talking. And he went, "You're a shithouse." And he obviously was talking to me. I was the only person that he could see. And I thought, something's happened here. I mean, I said, "Brian, is there a problem?" And he said, "Yes, there is." He said, "I don't pay my license fee to listen to biased commentators like you." And then he spent the next two or three minutes berating me for the commentary I'd done at Tottenham the previous Sunday. Didn't give my confidence a great boost as I walked round the ground to start my commentary from the far side. He disappeared into the dressing rooms. And luckily for me, Arsenal beat Nottingham Forest 2-0. Charlie Nicholas, remember him? Scored a couple of goals. And as I was about to leave the commentary position and I taking my headphones almost off and about to pack my bag, and then my producer said, John, just one thing before you go. He said, could you go and interview Brian Clough? This was not the best plan from my point of view. So I went, climbed down the steps, went. It was a very cold night, it was January. Went round the North London sort of perimeter, if you like, of the Arsenal pitch, past the corner flag. And as I finally got round to near that, because we had to bring the manager out then and bring a camera round, as I say, it was all very primitive. And there was Brian Clough standing by the tunnel, waiting for me to do the interview. And as I got a bit nearer to him, he saw me shivering, and he said, are you cold, John? And I thought, well, I've got to play this as best I can. So I said, yes, actually, Brian, I'm freezing. And he just held out a paper cup. Well, he said, here, get this down here. And I thought, well, that's very nice of him to give me a cup of tea after all the ruck we had before the game. And I sort of took it from him and I drank it. Of course, it was neat whiskey, which was tells you something about both of us. Anyway, we did the interview and he was great. As usual, when he got on the mic, he was a different bloke and he gave Arsenal a bit of credit and he had a few things to say about the referee. And he was just Brian Clough, you know. And I thought, well, this is good. We've got this on the air in Sports Night in an hour's time or whatever it was. Anyway, when we finished, I thought, well, we better just make the final piece. And I said, well, Brian, thanks very much for coming, waiting for me outside like that. I said, and thank you for doing the interview. And I said, I'm sorry we got across each other before the game. And he went, yes, but you're still a shithouse. So that was that. Now, I haven't got long, have I? Fucking hell. Let me just tell you, just very quickly, people say to me, how much has the game changed since you started? Well, I could be here for half an hour and longer. When I started, there was no commercial side to football. You know, sponsors hadn't moved in. There was hardly any advertising, not at all around the grounds. 1 to 11, the players all wore 1 to 11. You know, one substitute. I mean, I can't tell you how football has moved into a commercial era that I could never have envisaged in the 1970s. And I'll tell you one little story to illustrate it, and that'll be it for now. unless I get invited back. No, that will never happen. Anyway, 1970s, I've gone to Sheffield United, Bramall Lane. Some of you may know, some of you guys who know their sport, may remember that Bramall Lane used to be a cricket ground as well. So there was one side where there were no stands for the football. And we used to commentate from that side of the ground. And I was there in the morning checking the microphones like you do anywhere you go and making sure, got all my notes. And then I saw a guy walking towards me across the pitch. I don't know why I remember his name because I never met him again. And I don't know, it wouldn't mean anything to anybody, but his name was Harold Rumsey. Not Ramsey, as in Sir Alf, but Rumsey. I always remember that name like you do. And he came up to me and he said, hello, John. He said, I'm Harold Rumsey. I'm the new commercial manager of Sheffield United. I didn't even know what a commercial manager was because there weren't any then. I said, oh, yeah, pleased to meet you. And he said, I just thought you might like to come and see our new restaurant. And I said, well, it's 12:30, Harold. I said, I'm on the air in half an hour for Football Focus. I can't leave going to the city centre now. And he looked at me as if I'd come out another generation and said, no, it's in the ground. Now, I'm telling that story because then a restaurant in a football ground was a rarity. I mean, there was one in the corner at Highbury, wasn't there? But other than that, and then, of course, it mushroomed. And now we've got suites and we've got sponsors, private lounges. We've got executive boxes. You can't believe how much the game has changed in the years that I've been in football. Finally, people often say to me, is football the only thing you ever did? And I say, well, in my early years, I did a bit of boxing, which is where I met Ali, but that's another story. It's in the book. I did a tennis, beyond Borg years. And once I went to the Olympic Games for the BBC and they gave me Greco-Roman wrestling to cover. And I thought, what the hell am I going to do here? Never heard of what the sport is, never mind know anything about. So I got hold of a very famous, versatile, long past commentating colleague of mine, but you'll remember his name, David Vine. Yeah? And David did show jumping and he did weightlifting and he did ski sunday. David did everything. So I went to see him. I said, David, I've got a real problem. I've got Greco-Roman wrestling to do. And he said, all right, Marty. He said, don't worry too much. He said, I've got a book about it. He said, take it away. He said, study it, learn it, get acquainted with the holds and the scoring. That's the most important thing. So I went off, took the book away, studied it. When I got to Montreal, I went down to the Greco-Roman Wrestling Hall, and for six consecutive mornings, I commentated on every bout, and they never used a word. Hold on. On the seventh morning, there's a storm at the equestrian centre, and a voice in my ear, they didn't call me Motti, and a voice in my ear from the producer said, John, the show jumping's off, we're coming live to Greco-Roman Wrestling. And I thought, fantastic. I can unload all this rubbish that I've been storing up in my head. And sure enough, into the ring came a Soviet fighter, as he would call them, and a Bulgarian, and they fought for three rounds, and I came out with all the stuff, technical stuff and the score. And then when the bout was over and the umpire held up the hand of the winner, it was only then that I realised I'd got the wrestlers the wrong way round. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Couldn't make this one up. Bulgarian was in the red leotard and the Soviet wrestler was in blue. So I thought, what am I going to do now? So I went back to the television centre with my head in my hands, and on the steps, curiously, was David Vine. And he said, how did it go, Motti? And I said, well, David, up to a point it went really well. I did what you told me to do and I called it correctly in terms of the technique and the scoring. And I said, and then at the end I suddenly realised I'd got the two wrestlers completely the wrong way round. And he looked at me for a minute. He said, Motti, he said, I shouldn't worry if I were you. He said, there's only three people in the UK that know anything about Greco-Roman wrestling, and two of them will be out training. So there you are. A little bit about a broadcaster's life, but I've had a wonderful time. I got a great send-off from the BBC. Did one that was a terrific experience in my life to have worked for them for so long. And now I've moved on as though I've had a free transfer at the end of the season to TalkSport, where I'm also having a fantastic time. And thank you very much for listening to me today.
For more about the Oldie magazine and the lunches, go to theoldie.co.uk.